Hello, you're listening to Democracy Watch, the News Collective's weekly news report, bringing you alternative and undercovered current affairs from Vancouver and the Lower Mainland. My name is Alex DeBoer.
I am Max Newman.
And I'm Arman Rana. It's Thursday, May 9th at 5.03 p.m. We're broadcasting from UBC's Vancouver campus on the ancestral, traditional, and unceded territories of the Hakka Meenam-speaking Musqueam people.
We will start off today's show with a piece from the Youth Climate Strike, which happened last Friday, May 3rd. I decided to attend the march at the Vancouver Art Gallery in downtown Vancouver because I really wanted to learn more about how the whole youth climate action movement in Vancouver became so strong. Let's take a listen.
Yeah, we're just going to get this up right now. And who were you there with, Max?
I was there with Jero. He's a German photographer, a friend of mine.
Cool, yeah, and you guys got some great photos as well.
Yeah, definitely need to check that out on Twitter.
Yeah, totally. Check it out on our Twitter. And yeah, so now I have the piece up. We're going to go to Max's report on the Youth Climate Action Strike from last Friday. He did an awesome job. Let's take a listen.
The climate justice movement is the movement of our generation. Because just as this crisis is overwhelmingly huge, the movement to stop it is wonderfully so. By creating a more just world and desperately trying to chart a rational course for the future of civilization, we are doing the most important thing we could be doing right now. We are coming together to fight for what we love, and I could not imagine a more powerful or fulfilling or beautiful feeling. And that is how I know we will win.
That was Rebecca Hamilton, a 16-year-old Vancouver high school student. Rebecca is the organizer and spokesperson of Sustainability Teens and Climate Strike Canada, two youth-led climate change organizations. In December 2018, Rebecca organized the first Vancouver climate strike led by young people. Back then, just 50 people attended.
So we had our first strike on December 7th. There was 50 of us. We occupied the Minister for the Environment's office. We asked the BC, George Heyman. We asked him a couple questions. We talked to the mayor. And it was really amazing, the sense of connection, because for so long, all of us had felt really disconnected, worrying about climate crisis alone in our rooms. But now we were part of a movement. We were taking action. We were doing something about this.
Since December, a lot has changed. Last Friday, April 3rd, Rebecca helped organize her fourth youth climate strike. Hundreds of students filled up the Vancouver Art Gallery Plaza in downtown Vancouver. The strike was part of a larger series of actions across the country. I attended the march to witness the youth-led movement and get perspective from its leaders.
So, my name is Max Newman. I'm full of the art gallery right now, where the climate strike march is about to start. So I'm here with Gerald today. He's a German photographer. What do you think? How many people are attending the march, approximately? Do you think more than 1,000 people? I think there's a lot.
Very crowded, and the streets are full of students. It's good to see the young students are going out to demonstrate.
Myself and Gerald joined the march in front of the Vancouver Art Gallery and walked east down Georgia Street.
So we're marching down the street. We do a pause at the Environment and Climate Change Canada office. There will be some activities and speeches as well.
When we got to the Climate Change and Environment Canada office, Rebecca and fellow sustainability teens read out their 7 demands to fight climate change.
So we're going to read out our 7 demands right now. Everybody's going to read out their demands.
Protection of vulnerable groups.
Woo! Woo! Woo!
These demands are addressed to leaders and governments to start acting to combat climate change.
The march just stopped at Kendo Street. People are holding up signs.
I also had the chance to speak with Amelia Burgraff and Clarice Moore, some of the young protesters.
We're from Argyle, so North Shore, and we came down because we want to support sustainability in Canada, in the world.
To be heard.
The more people hear, the louder our voices are.
There's also a dog in the front row who's also kind of holding up a sign which is saying, "I don't want to become a hot dog." I think it's also a cool statement for climate action. So the march just stopped. People are sitting down on the street. After about an hour, we arrived back at the art gallery, where I had the chance to speak with Rebecca about her work for climate action.
So my name is Rebecca Hamilton. I'm a 16-year-old organizer with Climate Strike Canada. Right now we're at the Vancouver Art Gallery. We had, at the peak, we had around 2,000 to 3,000 young people crowding this plaza and flooding the streets of downtown Vancouver to demand climate action.
Rebecca gave me an overview of her recent organizing. She directly attributes past climate strikes to policy change at City Hall.
In January, we had a strike to support the Vancouver City Hall motion to declare climate emergency. So we striked, we gave speeches, did a creative action, and it passed, which was really incredible. And so Vancouver became the first Canadian city out of Quebec to declare climate emergency. And then on March 15th, we were part of the International Strike Day. So we had 2,000 students here then as well, as part of 1.4 million students across the world striking, and it was just such an incredible feeling. And since then, we've really ballooned. We have a lot of active organizers. We have like around 50 active organizers. We spend a lot of time on video calls, planning. We've done a couple of actions since then. So for example, we supported the Vancouver City Hall new climate action plan, which was the boldest climate action plan of any city, and now we're here.
So you think, after all the work you've put into it, do you have the feeling that the city councillors have really heard you the most and really taking you seriously now?
Yes, I think the youth voice is so powerful because we're the moral authority on this crisis. You can't say no to young people just asking for a safe future. And so I think we really resonate with adults who have children, you know, like they see their children in us. And I think we can really influence them on that emotional level. Like we tell them, you're doing this for your children. And so I think we have had an influence at City Council.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
The most recent climate change motion passed at City Hall on April 29th. This climate emergency plan has been credited for its ambitious aims. It includes 6 big moves to keep Vancouver's CO2 levels from rising above 1.5 degrees Celsius, the amount needed to prevent catastrophic environmental disasters.
And we're back. Thanks for listening. That was a piece on last Friday's youth-led climate strike, which happened in downtown Vancouver, went from the Vancouver Art Gallery to it went along Georgia and Max, where what
it
office?
It also ended at the
right, and Art Gallery, they stopped in front of the environmental.
Yeah, and climate.
What is it called?
I don't know the whole name, actually, because it's a really long name.
Okay, well, a Canadian environmental
office, yeah.
Office that's Street. Downtown. It, yeah. It said what it was in the piece, and we cannot recall at the moment. But it was a very well-attended march and has gotten a fair bit of media coverage. But I think what Max's piece really did was really take us there, if you weren't there, to hear what it was like to be in the crowd and mm-hmm. and the energy. I found the moment of silence you included was really powerful.
Yeah.
So for those who just tuned in, you are listening to Democracy Watch on CITR 101.9 FM. Democracy Watch is CITR's local news program. So we're covering climate change today. And then we're going to go to some more local news. News Collective member Armand Reyna has a headline to share with us. And then we're going to go to a very special piece that I've been working on about the koi release down at Sun Yat-sen Garden in Chinatown, which I'm sure everyone is well aware of. But this is a real treat. So before,
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, you guys should be. So before we go to that, Armand, do you want to tell us the local headline you wanted to share?
Yeah, so in the tech scene, Hootsuite recently laid off approximately 10% of their global workforce. And for those who don't know, Hootsuite is one of the premier Canadian tech companies. Mm-hmm. They provide like a dashboard for you to advertise on and engage on multiple social media platforms at once. And it's quite significant that they're laying off so many people.
Right. How many people did they lay off?
It's not clear. So they say approximately 10% of their workforce, which could be around 100 people because their global workforce is 1,000.
Okay, so 10% of their global workforce.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And they're Vancouver, so they have a significant number of those people are in Vancouver. And yeah, and then people are kind of, some people say it's a good sign because they're trying to lower their costs in preparation for an IPO or selling their company.
What does that mean, an IPO?
Like it means that they would go public. That means anyone could buy shares in their
become
company.
A publicly traded.
Yeah, exactly. So, but other and some people are also criticizing the way they did this. Like a lot of the employees were kind of shocked to find out there were a lot of tears and
they didn't have much notice.
They didn't have much notice, which just kind of goes against the ethos of Hootsuite, which was supposed to be like, you know, a very nice company, treats employees well. And against mm-hmm. the tech scene is generally considered, you know, people perceive it that they have somewhat more tolerable or better relations with management. And a lot of people were kind of marched out, and it was kind of surprising the way it went down. And some people are perceiving this that, you know, they're having difficulties with their business model, you know, rising costs because they have to pay a lot of money to Twitter, Facebook, and these other social media companies to make use of their indirect use of their platform. So it's not clear whether this is just them, you know, trying to lower costs to sell their company, or is it something more structural going on?
Right. It's interesting. I was listening to Canada Land yesterday, and Jesse Brown was speaking with the creator of Napster. I forget his name, but they were talking about sort of this like false benevolence of Silicon Valley and like related to this headline and sort of the power they have, but how it's sort of seen as being, you know, a forward-thinking, kind of progressive, more like liberal kind of tech movement. And yet, yeah, they do things like this. Or, I mean, I was going to say Uber, that's not Silicon Valley, but that's more new tech stuff. And there was just a strike.
Yeah, there's a strike taking place.
Yeah, is it still taking place? Yeah, for Uber drivers because they're getting paid, you know, below minimum wage. That's interesting to hear, and too bad for those workers.
Yeah, I think that those workers, a lot of them would find employment elsewhere. It's just the, you know, the kind of, as you said, the kind of the perceived benevolence about how you treat people as a human with dignity and respect. And they, you know, they fall short a lot. And that you know, that raises the question about, you know, tech workers are generally not unionized and this and that. But yeah, it does raise the question about how benevolent are these kind of organizations.
Yeah, and also how powerful are they? Again, leaning more towards like Silicon Valley giants like Google and Facebook and stuff. But when we have so few companies that control so much of the internet, it's just like really obviously frightening in terms of what they have access to and privacy and stuff. And in the conversation I was listening to on Candleland, they were talking about that as well. So, I mean, Hootsuite has some competition, I believe.
So on your first point, that's a really good point, that these big tech companies have so much negotiating power that Hootsuite is, which we perceive as this huge Canadian, it's one of the few Canadian tech companies that's worth $1 billion, they are basically, you know, maybe in having financial difficulties because those big social media companies have even more power and can just say, okay, we're going to increase the amount we charge for you to make, you know, this kind of use of our platform.
Yeah.
This kind of peripheral use. And they can just change their API, which is their kind of specification that Hootsuite needs to, you know, design their app around, like that, without consulting Hootsuite at all.
Yeah.
So even though Hootsuite in some sense is like, you know, a big tech giant here, it's also, it's getting kind of, you know, eaten up in some way by the even bigger tech giants.
Yeah, that's the thing. Because a company like Facebook, for example, owns, you know, again, this is not, we're not talking about Hootsuite, but like, similarly, Facebook owns Instagram and I think WeChat and just like
WhatsApp.
WhatsApp, that's what I'm thinking of, not WeChat. WeChat is the Chinese version. So there's just like, there's so few people controlling so much. And even if there are different companies, they're often controlled by the same people. I don't know. We need to start, I think, breaking up some companies. I don't know if that's ever going to happen, but it has happened in the past. Like the American government has broken up companies when they become too powerful and had too much of a monopoly. But
Elizabeth Warren is talking a lot about that these days, that south of the border.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what happens. Thanks for sharing that. Armand, did you have anything else you wanted to add?
Yeah, that's it.
Okay. I guess we'll stay tuned for what happens in the kind of coming days and weeks. Like
maybe they sell themselves and we'll find out if that was the end game.
Yeah. And you mentioned you think likely the folks who were let go will probably be able to find similar employment in Vancouver.
Yeah. Because the demand for especially highly skilled people working at Hootsuite have a lot of experience. There's a lot of demand for those kind of skills, and people put a premium on people who've worked for such a well-known brand as Hootsuite.
Cool, yeah. All right, well, we're going to go to a short break. You're listening to Democracy Watch on CITR 101.9 FM. We'll be back with some very delightful reporting on fish and otters and koi. Koi are the fish, but here in Vancouver, some pretty interesting news today, so stay tuned. We will be right back.
My name is DP. I'm a CITR volunteer community member, and I have been for 7 years. The radio thing happened because I thought that it was really cool. It's just me and the mic, and that's it.
What is Access Day?
It's where we acknowledge accessibility and how we can promote accessibility, not only on radio, but in our daily life.
What is special about this year's Access Day?
It's the 5th It's the fifth. You know, it's big. And last year we had across Canada participating. It's great to see other stations being a part of this special occasion.
On Thursday, May 16th, head to your local community radio station and tune in to Access Day 2019, anytime between 9 a.m. and 7 p.m. PST.
Let's see here. God, ugh. Everybody dance, dance. What, you don't like to dance? Everybody dance. Ugh. Everybody. God, this is awful. Isn't there anything? Anything? Anything?
Listening to the radio these days can be distressing. Fortunately, here at CITR, our programmers choose the music that they play, so our charts reflect what people actually listen to. To find out what's really topping the charts, pick up a copy of Discorder magazine or check us out online at citr.ca. Unless, of course, you'd rather keep listening to the chart-topping single, Everybody Dance.
What, you don't like to dance? Everybody dance. Everybody dance. Everybody dance, dance. What, you don't like to dance?
Discorder magazine has been supporting local music for over 30 years. Thanks to the long-term support of the Rickshaw Theater, Discorder lives. Your favorite bands are playing at the Rickshaw Theater. Check out their calendar just behind the cover of Discorder magazine or at rickshawtheater.com.
All right, and we're back. You are listening to Democracy Watch on CITR 101.9 FM. We heard a couple ads there. We before that, we're talking about a climate strike that took place led by youth, mostly teenagers, groups called Sustainabilities and Climate Strike Canada.
Yep.
Yeah. That Max Newman, News Collective member who's here in studio with me now, covered. And then we've also gone over a local headline. Hootsuite is laying off 10% of its workforce. So that's what you've missed if you're just tuning in. We are now going to turn to a very... I'm looking for descriptors. We're going to turn to a piece that is about a... a seemingly serene pond in the middle of Chinatown, but not so serene, because 6 months ago, an otter struck and murdered 11 adult koi. These are very valuable fish. They live a really long time, and they're meaningful in the Chinese culture. When this took place, there was a bit of a media storm picked up on by large media outlets, even the BBC covered us.
Wow.
It was all over social media. It was all anyone could talk about. And people honestly were divided between Team Koi and Team Otter. So I don't know, a lot of friendships ended. It broke up a lot of families. People are still recovering, actually. I'm just kidding.
So are you Team Koi or Team Otter?
Don't make me do that, Max. I'm totally objective and unbiased.
Yeah.
Because I'm a robot journalist.
Sure.
What are you, Team Koi or Team Otter?
Team Otter, I would say.
Team Otter. Yeah. Controversial. Yeah. People, I think... John says boo. John's Team Koi. John Q just walked by. Famous John Q. Armand?
I want to find out more about the story. Oh, I just missed before this entire thing.
Yeah.
So I need to find more to be make an objective assessment.
You somehow missed the huge media storm and the most important story of the century. But once you hear this piece, you'll know what's up. And then you can tell us if you are Team Koi or Team Otter. And I got to say, I think it was... I think things have changed since the Koi... are now being returned to the pond. Like, from the beginning to the end of this incident, I believe it was called it this morning's press release at Sun Yat-sen Garden. So we can talk more about that after the piece, but just for a tiny bit more context before we go to it, myself, Alex DeBoer, and Adeline Pang, another one of our News Collective members who couldn't be in studio with us, this morning at 9:30 went to Sun Yat-sen Garden, which is in Chinatown, to attend a press release because three of the adult koi who survived the otter massacre were being re-released into the pond. So let's go to this piece. Sun Yat-sen Garden is a peaceful retreat in Vancouver's bustling downtown. But 6 months ago, that peace was disturbed.
In late November 2018, a river otter entered the site, killing 11 adult koi.
These koi, symbols of fortune and prosperity in Chinese culture, were murdered by this twisted river otter.
While leading a public tour a few years ago, she and her group saw a large koi protecting a baby turtle from an approaching heron, pushing the heron until it flew away. And that's just one story.
The koi, who once shielded a baby turtle from a looming murderous crane, had become victims of the butcher of Sun Yat-sen. But today's story is one of redemption. So we're here at the Sun Yat-sen Classical Chinese Garden, and some adult koi are being lifted from kind of big coolers into the pond. And it's honestly a pretty slow process. I'm getting a little bit bored. Adeline, how are you feeling?
Yeah, they must be, I guess, testing the temperature. It mm-hmm. probably took around
repeatedly.
five minutes.
Was it only five? Yeah, about 5 minutes. Yeah. That's one.
Well, minimum 5 minutes.
Minimum.
To get them
minimum. Yeah.
So, yeah.
There's a lot of cameras on these old fish.
Yeah, the fish are probably wondering, what am I waiting for?
What are the fish thinking? We can only speculate.
Oh yeah.
So we have about two more adult koi to be released. CITR News reporters Adeline Pang and myself, Alex DeBoer, went down to Sun Yat-sen Classical Chinese Garden on the morning of Thursday, May 9th. 6 months ago, three adult koi had been rescued from the garden and kept at the Vancouver Aquarium, while the butcher of Sun Yat-sen was still at large. But now they're home.
So we have the fish in the coolers and the small ones in the tank. And before I take questions and answers, which I'd love to do, I would like to invite the aquarium to actually do the release now, in fairness, because the fish have been in the cooler for about an hour. So we want to release them, and then I'll take questions and answers. Is that fair? Great. Over to the aquarium.
Not only were the surviving koi gently released back into their home waters, 10 more adult koi were brought in to join them from UBC's Natobi Memorial Garden, a traditional Japanese garden on its Point Grey campus.
The amazing donation from Natobi Garden at UBC, that was awesome, that we can replenish the pond. So what I thought this morning, what we're planning is...
I think what's happening now is some of the koi from Natobi Garden at UBC are being released because 10 were donated. So...
Yeah, I was walking by Natobi the other day and I wondered where a lot of the koi had gone. So.
People in the media are coming up with, koi ponds around us. Now, when Debbie was talking about the woman who was representing the garden here, when she was talking about the koi being murdered, I didn't see any smirks in the media. That's all I have to say.
Okay.
It must be team
order.
Why don't
we take a few questions? For those of you
Vancouver
remember,
Park Board Director Howard Norman took questions from a swarming crowd of media. Howard explained the new measures taken by the park board to fortify the garden from future otter attacks.
We've got the higher gates, we're going to have people obviously watching closely to make sure that the otter doesn't return. We'll do an otter watch. I'm sure that Deb and her team will be looking out for the otter. So the best of our ability, that's what we're going to try to do.
Howard seemed utterly confident that the butcher of Sun Yat-sen acted alone.
I still feel that this otter was a one-off that migrated out of Falls Creek over to Andy Livingston, where we have a pond and a fountain and a quite a large river that comes off probably the size of that terracotta warrior sign. So you hear the water running. So if some reason it was attracted there, and then when that was shut off, when we winterized that pond, which we often do because we don't want those pipes to freeze, it was almost shortly after that that the river otter showed up here. So I've spoken with people in the neighborhood. It's amazing what you can learn in the community when you out and talk with people. That there were some people that were feeding the otter. That's what they told me. And so it had been there for a while. I think what happened was we shut the water off. It probably continued to hear the water running here and probably made its way over during the night. That's the best I can put together. So we've got...
After the otter struck back in November, the three adult koi who survived were whisked away to the Vancouver Aquarium. Myself and Adeline were able to speak with the koi's caretaker, Lee Newman, curator of fishes at the Vancouver Aquarium. So what was it like taking care of the koi? Did you have to make room for them? Was it something the aquarium had to put a lot of effort into adjusting to?
Well, like any... you have to have some perspective on fish keeping. Fish keeping is one of those things where, you know, you start out with a small aquarium and a few fish and it just grows and grows and grows. Well, at the aquarium, it's sort of the pinnacle of that. We have lots of different species. We have lots of different enclosures. So managing that can sometimes be a little tricky. But with the koi, we had an upper holding room. We call it upper holding room because it's on the street level floor. And we had a 10-foot circular. 3-meter circular that wasn't being used, so we could actually run cold fresh water through it and hold the koi for a period of months.
So the koi, were they ever on display at the aquarium?
No, they were never on display.
Great. How do you feel today seeing them released into Sun Yat-sen Garden?
Oh, I think it's great. The first time I'd seen the garden was when they first called us about the koi, but it's a really nice setting. It's a beautiful pond. It's huge. Lots of place to swim around. The koi can do everything koi would like to do, including, you know, eating when they want, spawning when they want, all those sorts of things. So I think it's great.
We were also able to speak with a Vancouver aquarium biologist who tended to the koi at the aquarium. He was tasked with actually releasing the koi into the pond waters. Can I start out by just grabbing your name, please, and if you don't mind telling us your role at the Vancouver Aquarium?
I'm Michael Manalang. I'm a biologist at the Vancouver Aquarium.
So you just released the adult koi as well as the baby koi. What was that like? It was a bit of a slow process, I noticed.
Yeah. So at the aquarium, we had them at 11 degrees Celsius. So as the pond heated up here, we were slowly matching it. But seeing it this morning, it was at 16 degrees. So we wanted to be able to match the temperatures properly. So we were trying to get up to 14, just within 2 degrees. And that was enough for it to be close enough for us to release the fish comfortably.
Was it a risk if it if the temperature wasn't matched and it was a shock? Would it be harmful to the fish?
It can be jarring to fish and stressful, so that's why we try to keep it as close as we can. That's why we tried to warm up the fish at the aquarium at the same rate as the pond was naturally heating up with the seasons changing.
Was it a happy occasion seeing them released, or do you feel in any way emotional about saying goodbye to the koi?
It's nice to see them back in their proper home. We've had them for like 6 months, I believe, now, and time really flies when something like this happens. And in the mornings, you'd walk in and you'd see them check you out at the side window. So that's going to be a big difference in my mornings, but I'm happy to see them back to where they should be.
Thanks.
Yeah, no worries.
Back at last, with the original koi back where they belong and the new koi from Natobi Garden to keep them company, the sunny day seemed especially calm and bright. We ended out our reporting in a short conversation with MPA Park Board Commissioner Tricia Barker. We asked her about the Park Board's stewardship of Sun Yat-sen Garden and why she is firmly Team Koi.
So I was wondering, what is the park board's role with Sun Yat-sen Garden? Because it seems like there's also Sun Yat-sen as an organization, but then there's oversight from the park board. How does that work?
Well, we're partners with them. And so, yeah, they're part of our park network. And so we're obviously, as you can see, very, very involved with what goes on here.
Okay, so you work together to run the garden?
Well, they run the gardens, but we like, it's like the other partnerships that we have in the city with the community centers, and we're very much involved with anything in the city along these lines. And as I said, so when things like come up like this, then we can step in and assist as, you know, UBC and the aquarium and everyone joined in.
Right. And also with things like putting up the wiring to prevent future otter break-ins, stuff like that.
Yeah, as I said, we'll be the partner with them to do these types of things, as we're the partners with the community centers, those types of things.
What was it like seeing the koi release back into the pond today?
I got really involved with this story, and I was definitely Team Koi at the very beginning. I was definitely. So to see this back, and I was surprised at how quickly it came back, that we were able to, you know, restore this for all the people coming through and how important it was for these fish to be here. So I just thought it was, you know, there's not often we get to do the good news stories. And so why not just take a part of the day to come down and enjoy this?
And sorry, why were you Team Koi? Could you tell us a bit about that?
I'm a Tibetan Buddhist and I took my vows 20 years ago. And I believe all life is vital and important. And fish aren't just food. They have their own life, and someone came into their home and ate a whole bunch of their family members. So I was very much like, yeah, you can't just do that. And people thinking, oh, the otter was really cute. But I'm saying I value all the fish wherever they are. So that was definitely my motivation.
Thanks very much.
Okay, take care.
Thank you for listening. Reporting by Adeline Pang and Alex DeBoer. Editing and production, Alex DeBoer. Special thanks to the CITR News Crew.
Join us on Thursday, May 16th from 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. PST for the 5th annual Access Day and enjoy 10 straight hours of programming produced around the theme Accessibility in Our Community. Pieces were contributed from radio stations across Canada. There will be live performances by Greg Labine and Christina Sheldon out of the Vancouver Adapted Music Society. You can tune into your local campus and community radio station or stream online at citr.ca.
We are so happy because Fun Drive 2019 is officially over. What a great feeling. To everyone who donated their time, their energy, and their money, the people who forgot to donate now but will online at citr.ca/donate, those who couldn't donate this year but will next year, and to our community as a whole, CITR and Discorder just want to say,
all right, I'm gonna do it wrong. I'm about to spit in this mic like freestyle elfin, you know?
Okay. Wait, hold on. Does this make sense?
No, but who cares? All right, let's go. Finally, we... You're not even gonna last. All right. Victoria's pretty good, not bad festival, fountain, just back from France... Montreal? What the f***? It's a script. I couldn't even... What? Victoria's pretty good, not bad festival. Fountain just back from France. What are you even saying here? Oh, you're trying to say these are the things featured in this one. You should probably specify that. Because even a f***ing elf couldn't understand that, okay?
Think you can do better than an elf? At CITR, we want to have a variety of voices on the air. Want to write scripts? Do some voice acting? Broadcast your creativity? Volunteer with the CITR Production Department. No experience? We can also train you in everything required. Send an email to psas@citr.ca to learn more. And don't wait to get your voice on the air.
Hello, and we're back. You're listening to Democracy Watch on CITR 101.9 FM. Our show is wrapping up, but we're going to go over a few more headlines. We just heard, before we do that, I guess we need to go back and get Armand to tell us whether he is pro Team Koi or Team Otter. So for those who are just tuning in, we just heard really an incredible work of radio art, yeah, I think. Really just, yeah, who did it? Oh, it was me. yeah, no, I stole some songs from YouTube. Real talk. Yeah, I made that really fast. It was not a work of art, but it was silly. It was fun.
It was fun.
So that was a report on the adult koi who survived the otter massacre at Sun Yat-sen Garden back in November and have been now released back to their home pond waters. And also joining them are a dozen koi from the Japanese classic Japanese garden, Natobi, at here on
Memorial
campus.
Memorial Garden, yeah.
So we have, you know, the coming together of two nations. Beautiful, I think. The otter never was caught. Don't know where he is. But I think his popularity has taken a bit of a nosedive. We heard Trisha Barker at the end there, NPA Park Board Commissioner, really strong feelings against the otter. And if you heard the piece, I did play on that, you know, calling the otter twisted. I pulled out the T word. So, you know, that's not necessarily how I feel. That's a bit, you know, that's for fun. It's for fun. Armand, Team Koi or Team Otter?
I have to go with the otter.
Nice.
Ooh, yeah, because yeah, Max is Team Otter, Team too. Otter. You're still on Team Otter, yeah, even after hearing that piece.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
I mean, no one asked the otter how he felt after eating all the old fish.
You think because the koi were old that maybe they weren't as good?
Yeah.
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 Okay. Based on like science? Or?
Well, I think it's because of the otter we got such an interesting story.
That's so true.
Like, otherwise, the koi didn't contribute anything to the story. They were just chilling. And the otter took, it was the otter's initiative.
May
took the sky train.
To take the sky train.
We suspect he took the sky train from Falls Creek.
From Falls Creek to Dr. Sun Yat-sen National Park.
I would love to see the sky train doors open and a little otter get out. I would love to see that.
Yeah.
I would love that. I hear what you guys are saying. But are you thinking about how the koi shielded a baby turtle from a heron, which is the same as a crane in my mind, which I wrote in the narration? Are you thinking about that? Because that's pretty heroic.
Yeah, I think I think the kois had an opportunity to prove themselves against the otter.
And they did not.
And they were found lacking.
Yeah. Really, really.
Except
weak.
The three that survived. I'm
just
pro
like blobs of.
You're pro the.
I'm pro the three that survived.
Okay.
The tough ones. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. You're like a real survivalist. Yeah. Survival of the fittest, Darwinist over here. Yeah. Okay. I was gonna say something and now I can't remember to do with the koi. I was gonna say in terms of the koi shielding the baby turtle, you know, it reminds me, like, I think of them now as sort of the blue whales of fish. You know, you hear those stories of I really like whales, and I like big whales. Killer whales are dolphins, so just put that out there right away. So you hear those stories, you know, you just hear them all the time of like blue whales protecting seals from killer whales.
Really?
Oh yeah. You hear it all the time. hearing it all the time. People are just saying it. I've seen it on YouTube. And it made me think of this koi, you know? In this case, the The crane or heron is the killer whale.
But why was the crane going for the turtle instead of going for the koi? Like, I thought, don't birds
too
eat
big.
Fish?
Yeah, but the koi's too big. Oh, I see. Yeah, for a little skinny old heron crane. Have you seen the cranes down at Stanley Park?
No, I can't recall their size.
Or herons, whatever. Yeah. I don't know what the difference is. Blue herons. Yeah, if you haven't seen them, check out the herons down at Stanley Park by the park board office and the tennis courts. It's honestly really wonderful to see. I've been down there a couple times. They're all nesting, and they're like these weird, awkward birds. They're kind of like, they're like blue, but they're like, they're like the, like, I don't know, they're all like lanky and stuff. And like, when I was there, an eagle was sitting there perching there. Apparently the eagles come and eat their babies. No one talks about that. So the eagle is the otter of the sky, obviously. And so anyway, like, yeah, this otter of the sky was just sitting there. And anyway, they were freaking out, but they're really awkward and they make like an awkward noise and they're like flying around. It's like their legs are, it's just, yeah, they're funny birds.
You check out Stanley Park.
Check out the cranes. Otters at Stanley Park.
The cranes.
Sorry. Oh my God. Shoot. I'm just, honestly, you guys, I'm really tired. Really tired. And yeah. Any other headlines? We have about 10 minutes. Local headlines. There was another mall that was sold.
Yeah. So City Square Mall.
Which is right across from City Hall.
Yeah, and it was sold, I think it was there. I was there the other day when we were reporting there, and it was sold for $225 million to the Richmond-based Sun Commercial Real Estate Group. And one of the reasons was it had a really high vacancy rate, and it lost its Safeway, which was like its main
market. The Safeway's not there anymore.
Yeah, it lost it last year.
Interesting. I didn't realize that. Well, we are seeing a great threat to malls in the city. As you know or have probably heard, International Village, I'm not sure if that's the official title of the mall. I think it is. That's the theater, the name of the theater.
The Odeon?
It's the mall. Yeah, Cinema Odeon, whatever. Yeah. It's like there's seven theaters. At the top, it's in Chinatown, just like bordering sort of on Chinatown and Yale Town. The exact cross streets are, it's like Pender and Corral, I think. So that mall, huge mall, super weird. Lots of like magic stores and dragon figurines for sale.
And sketchy stuff.
And like, it's like super weird, and it's, people like it though. Yeah. For one, it's cool to have weird things. Plus there were like three good businesses in there. There was the Cat Cafe. That's great. Yokoyaya, Japanese dollar store. People love it. And then the theater at the top. There's like seven theaters. We have barely any theaters in the city. They're like all closing down. There's going to be like two theaters left, literally. It's going to be like the Rio, because the Granville 7 closed a couple years ago. The Hollywood closed. They tore down that one on Canby, the Ridge, and then built apartments or condos called the Ridge. I hate when places do that, you know? They like tear down.
Appropriate the.
They appropriate the thing they destroyed. Right. Like, there's a mall on the island that was named after the forest, the literal forest that was cut down so that the mall could exist. It's so dark. Mm. It's so dark.
Yeah, in Westbrook, I think there's one of the apartments is called Spirit or something in Westbrook Village here.
Right, where they cut out part of Pacific Spirit Park. Yeah, at the swimming pool near my parents' house in South Surrey, there's like these giant statues of deers outside drinking from like a water fountain. And I'm like, you literally destroyed deer habitat to make this pool. Like, there were deer there. Like, there are still, you can see deer a bit, but they're just being pushed out of their habitat literally by the pool.
By fake deers.
By fake deers.
Why do you think malls are shutting down
in the city?
Is it because nobody goes to shop there anymore, or?
That's a really good question. Based on like no expertise, I would guess that one, land value is high in the city. You know, taking that land and building condos or rental housing would be, I guess, more profitable than running the businesses that are currently in that mall, both these malls. But the reason it's more profitable, I would guess, is because of things like Amazon. People are buying stuff online. I think that's like a huge thing. I think that's really cutting into physical
stores.
I don't know. Do you agree? That's just my thought.
Yeah. I'm also thinking, like, do people have a different preference? Like, maybe in the past people went to malls and nowadays people go to individual stores that are not part of, like, just on the street, but not necessarily in a mall. Or
maybe, yeah, it's like a cultural shift.
But yeah, probably online. What do you think, Max?
I think that's a good question. I think it depends. Maybe also, like, I mean, if we have such a weather like this in May already, I think we will not need any malls in the future.
Or rather, we will. In fact, I was listening to a piece on CBC about this mall in Prince George, where there are so many forest fires. We're getting smoke from forest fires here, but where it's especially concentrated, people are going and spending their time, their summers in the mall.
Yeah. All the opposite will happen. Yeah,
yeah, totally. Yeah. And the manager of that mall was saying that he's spending all this money, upping their budget on these filters for the mall to clean the air, because obviously the air that they condition comes from outside, and the filters that normally last like 6 months are lasting like a week or something, so he's like having to replace them all the time. But I thought that was really interesting, and so I wonder if in the future if people will be spending more time inside and inside public places. I mean, there's, you know, swimming pools, arenas, stuff like that, but malls are one of the places people used to go to hang out inside. And if there are no malls, I guess you can hop from store to store, or just don't leave your house, or whatever. But yeah. Well, any other headlines, or shall we switch it to Auto DJ before we have the Spencer Latu show, which is coming up next?
Well,
for our dear listeners.
The last headline was that there was a proposal to do something about the amount of dog poo that is in Vancouver by Councillor Kirby Young to increase the number of, I think, increase the number of bins or something. And yeah, it's a growing problem. There's a growing dog population in Vancouver. More than 350,000 dogs do their business in Metro Vancouver every day. It's a lot of dogs.
Wow, lots of dogs. Yeah. And she's bringing that to council soon?
Yeah. The most, I think so. I believe so.
I think council meets on the 15th or something. I think it's next week that council meets, pretty sure. Well, that'll be interesting. The excitement of municipal politics gets me every time. I love it, though. You know, this is your community. People are always paying attention to, like, what is Donald Trump doing? I mean, whatever. Yeah. Like, it matters, but also it doesn't affect your daily life. And so it's, I don't know, it's really important. Pay attention to the koi in your community.
And the otters.
And the otters. you guys are so biased. Team Otter. All right. Well, we're gonna say goodbye here. Thank you to anyone who's listening for listening. This has been your weekly broadcast of Democracy Watch on CITR 101.9 FM. We'll be back again next Thursday at 5 p.m. I might put some stuff on Seeking Office. We could maybe put your march on Seeking Office. We'll have to see. Sure. We might put some stuff on Seeking Office. Seeking Office, if you don't know, is our municipal politics podcast. So subscribe to that if you haven't already. It's available wherever you get your podcasts. So up next on CITR is the Spencer Latu Show. Stay tuned for that. And see you next week.